everyone. Thank you so much for joining me on Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not what we will become. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. That has to be incredibly difficult. But then that's not it. It still has to struggle more to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly and to take it all around the world wherever it wants to go. I am talking with a great guest today, Sam Young of Young Scholars Academy, and he is going to share with us about Twice Exceptional. Sam and I met through the Executive Function Online Summit, and we connected instantly. He reached out and he's like, hey, can we connect? Let's talk. And it was just a beautiful friendship that was started. And I'm really happy that he's here today to share more about himself and his organization and how he is helping students all across the United States. So welcome, Sam. How are you?
Shelly, I'm really excited to be here. So thank you so much. And I'll say this in the beginning, I'll probably say it in the end if I remember, speaking of executive functions, but I really appreciate the platform that you've created here for people. And I'm so grateful to you for creating this community of people who come together and get support and connect each week or however often.
Yeah, no, it's hopefully every week. It just depends on if I can get a guest booked and if they show up. So, and if, you know, nothing else happens in the meantime with their schedule or my schedule, but yeah, I try to do it weekly and thank you. I do appreciate that. I want to do this show because it helps bring awareness to so many different aspects, and it helps, I hope, change people's perspectives about others who are different than them in some way, and that we stop focusing so much on the word disability, but look at people's abilities. And some of these groups and people that I've had over the course of, I guess, now 3 years, just the amazing and incredible things that are happening within everyday life for quote unquote everyday people. You know, I don't have celebrities on because I feel like they are the ones that people say, oh, that's just, you know, that's not the normal. And I want to make this normal and that everybody sees every other person and goes, all right, let's build you up. Let's not limit your potential. So enough about me. Tell us about you.
I think that's really important. I mean, that's a really good launch pad because I feel that there's something to be said for, you know, context, right? For the setting. And when we think about whether it's like difference or disability, you know, the thing that usually changes is just the context. You know, I joke that someone's superpower is relative to the situation, right? If I have the ability to create infinite amounts of water, you'll want me in, when there's a fire, but I may not be that cool on an island where there's lots of water, right?
Right, so, exactly. So
if you think of a lot of the times when we think of like disability or differences, it's often context dependent, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my add-on. Let me answer your question. Who am I? It's a question I ask a lot. I am Sam Young. I'm the founder and director of a virtual enrichment school, a strength-based enrichment school for differently wired, neurodivergent and gifted kids called Young Scholars Academy. And the idea is kind of what we were talking about. It's helping our kids discover the context in which they thrive and the skill set that they have and the unique abilities and talents that they have that they can develop and lead a meaningful life as opposed to living a deficit-based life, which is this idea that we're kind of constantly bringing the bottom up, right? Instead, we're focusing on helping our kids raise the roof and develop the things that make them incredible and super. I myself am neurodivergent. I was diagnosed from a very young age with reading challenges, which probably is dyslexia from ADHD. And I joke that I got diagnosed 3 times just to make triple sure that I still have ADHD and that it's just, and so I've really committed a lot of my, I've spent a lot of my life struggling and I've committed my life to helping people develop their strengths and live in their zones of genius. Because I believe that so much of us have it backward and we beat ourselves up and we think there's something wrong with us. And it's just infuriating because there's millions of people feeding ourselves the same lies. By the way, I'm guilty of this too. I'm not free of it, even though I preach it. We focus on the things that we don't do. We only see the areas where we need to improve. And so I joke that I'm leading a strength-based revolution, trying to help people tap into their strengths.
Yeah, it is so true. And I don't understand why we do that to ourselves. I mean, I am not diagnosed with anything like, you know, being neurodivergent, but I have struggled with anxiety in my lifetime. And, you know, so I have had those feelings of, you know, well, why can't I do this or that? Low self-esteem, always seeing what the best thing about someone else was, and then thinking I needed to be the best of all of those things. And then not, of course, being able to live up to that. And then going, oh, why can't I be like that? Why can't I do that? Well, that's not where my gifts lie. And over the course of my lifetime, I have figured out where my gifts lie. But when I was a kid, that concept was incredibly foreign. And that's where my heart is. And I believe that's a big part of where your heart is as well, is with our children. Just because we are both focusing more on school types of settings, but also for the adults who didn't get that kind of support when they were going through school. So we do have Fran joining us from Southern Illinois. So hi, Fran, thanks for joining us and thanks for popping in. So you said you are neurodivergent yourself. So what was school like for you that you either want to emulate in your own Scholars Academy or you definitely don't want to do?
I think that, again, it's, you know, I joke that there's more quotes attributed to Albert Einstein than he ever probably said in his life. but there is this one that sticks out. And again, I'm sure it wasn't him, but the idea that, you know, if you judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree, it will spend its whole life feeling it's stupid. I know it's such a cliche, but we don't like move past it. You know, we might know the saying, but when you really process that, it's like, it's so true, right? We spend a lot of our lives thinking that there's something wrong with us because of a narrow skill range that's often required in school. And I was very much like that. And when you say, like, I don't know why we do this, I think it's kind of trauma. You know, I always felt that the key to my success was that I was, you know, stupid, but I could work hard. And I really felt like I had to spend a lot of time. So I didn't really have much of a life. I was really social and I love conversing with people. I loved any distraction that would prevent me from having to read, which would sometimes get me in trouble, but sometimes make me friends. but I just found that when you ask someone to do something, when you ask me to do something that I'm not good at, I would want to avoid it at all costs. And if you ask me to do something that I was really good at, I would stay up late thinking about it. And so I feel so many people are forced into this narrow intelligence view of like schoolhouse giftedness, right? And and we say, okay, this is important, but certainly when we zoom out, no, no one really cares about the things that you can do. They often are concerned with the things that you do and the things that you do well. I joke that, you know, no one cares about Simone Biles' ability to do anything else but be, you know, a world champion gymnast. But Simone Biles has ADHD. She may very well have spent a good amount of time, you know, beating herself up. I don't know. One of my favorite educational psychologists, Dr. Joseph Ranzulli, put it in a way that I think is far more eloquent and to the point. He said, no one cares about Einstein's ability to paint or Picasso's ability to do complex math, right? No one cares about Einstein's ability to paint or Picasso's ability to do complex math. So why are we so obsessed with being good at everything?
Right.
We constantly compare. And as, you know, Teddy Roosevelt said, like, comparison is the thief of joy. And like you, Shelley, I meet someone and I'm incredibly envious of their ability to do something that I'm usually insecure about. I never read a book until I was all the way through, until I was in my late 20s. And it was not that I suddenly learned how to read. It was that I got Audible and I started listening to books. Okay. It's not like something suddenly happened. My brain, you know, finished developing at 27 and I could read. It's just that I changed the way that I intook information. Now I read a book a week. Right. And it's something I've always craved. I love movies. I love podcasts. And I just didn't intake books in that manner. And so when we like let go of how things come to pass, I've gone on a rant here, but
no, you're fine.
When we let go on how things come to pass, we can kind of see, I think, that we can access things, we can do certain things that we might have never appreciated before. So, long way to tell you that school was tough for me. I had to work really hard, and I've kind of committed myself to hopefully helping people free themselves that, like, just because you may not be good in school doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. In fact, most of the really successful people I've met in my life were actually not good in school, and they've developed their talents because of that or in spite of that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many people in the fine arts, in sports, in basically all of, I shouldn't say all, in all of the ways that we think of as people being famous, so many of them, whether they're famous for inventing or they're a famous actor or they're famous for sports, they have some sort of disability.
Mm.
And I think a lot of it does come down to the fact that those who have to struggle, the reason that they have to, or not that they, that they have, that, what am I trying to say? Those who struggle, those who have to struggle to get through school, have learned about failure. And they've learned that it's not the end of the world. And that, you know, if they do put in some extra time, or if they try to learn some material in a different way or from a different person or a different media, that they can still learn a lot of what they need to know, or they can, in a lot of instances, invent something else to get what they need. And so in my book, when I talk to some of the students and their families, that was a kind of a theme, was the fact that they had failed so much, not that they tried to fail, but no matter how much effort they put into during life in school, they learned that it gave them the, some of the like character building that they needed to keep trying. Where people who get straight A's, when they suddenly get something less than that, they feel horrible and they don't know how to pick themselves up and carry on. So
yeah, I think that's incredibly important. I talk about that a lot in our classes. You know, we have students who maybe historically did well in class and they're more reluctant to take a risk. And I often joke that, like, I don't hire people who are really good students because I want my teachers to be innovators and free thinkers and people who are thinking outside the box, not box checking. And again, not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if people who are schoolhouse gifted, that's a very real skill set and that can set someone up, you know, for life. The flip side of that coin is that education is incredibly outdated and is often sort of preparing people for, you know, an obedient industrial era, which is more or less bygone. But there are important skills, taking notes, capturing ideas, turning in things on time. Like, these are incredibly valuable skills to have. I think what's more important, though, is as you say, getting over that fear of failure. I remember at a very, I think it was maybe 8 or 9 or so, I started doing martial arts. I remember the first time I did Taekwondo. I remember the first time I got punched. I was like, you know, that's not as bad as I thought. And then once I got hit and then I was sparring more confidently and more comfortably, and I like kind of got over that fear of failure. Like, the worst thing that could happen to me was I could get punched. Right. And then I got punched and I was like, hey, getting punched isn't so bad. And I started getting better, you know? And again, that's a very visceral example. That's, you know, a bit violent perhaps, but I think that it sort of embodies this transformation. When we take a big shot and it doesn't work out, we learn more there than we do probably playing it safe, you know, much of our lives.
Right.
I think it's one of the great, great teachers. But there's a lot of trauma around that. There's a lot of kids who really have struggled and have failed. And that, what does that do? It closes the door to learning, you know, and you start associating school with bad feelings, or when we start to see kids really struggle and then they're not open to it, then they avoid it. They feel physically ill at times. And that's heartbreaking to see.
Yeah, for sure. So, the question that I had asked you that we've taken a really long answer and trip down the road here was, what did you have in school that you wanted to emulate in the Young Scholars Academy? And what did you not want to do? So I think we've heard about the things that you don't want to do with your students. So what were the things from your childhood experiences that you said, oh yeah, or high school experiences that you want to and do include in Young Scholars Academy? And yeah, by the way, you, I just have to say a silly thing. So when I saw the name Young Scholars Academy, I was thinking age. It didn't dawn on me until I was like prepping for this week last week. I was like, oh, duh, it's after his name.
I think that most people, I mean, it's both, right? I would say my kind of like public name is Mr. Sam, as most of families in our community. We have like 190 families. I would say that there's a large majority of people that don't know that
it's
named after my last name. So you're not alone. You're not alone. I actually had this conversation an hour ago. And I'm sorry if I'm a bit more tangential. I was just joking with my wife before we got on the call. I was like, I don't think I've had enough caffeine today. I feel under caffeinated. And so I'm like, I might be going on these little rants. So pull me in. But to answer your question, I joke that we remember the debates and the dioramas. You know, I think that when it comes to looking down at our own past, we remember the things that were meaningful. Again, Dr. Joseph Randulli talks about like the importance of creativity and authenticity. You know, if we're doing creative learning that's stimulating mentally, if it pulls us in, if we're hooked, if we're having extended time on task focus, and if we're using this creativity, that's when we start to see these like above average abilities. That's when we start to hone our strengths and talents. And so I think that the things that school did incredibly well was anytime we had to do something that mattered, right? Anytime I had to debate or anytime I had to build a diorama or a model of something. I mean, I still remember projects from kindergarten, first grade that were really formative experiences for me because I wanted to do well. And it was something that I cared deeply about. And I always thought that's what school is really supposed to be about. It's these moments in time where students, you know, learn a framework or they break through a wall and they do something that literally alters the course of their life. I had a teacher in ninth grade, Mr. Dunphy, and I always felt like English teachers and me, just we weren't a match. I liked the idea. I was always drawn to the humanities side, but I just did not. I had this negative self-worth. And I went to Mr. Dunphy's class and I was taking mostly like higher level classes, but Mr. Dunphy's class, I was taking like the lowest available. And I went into his class and on the first day he said, Young, stick around after class. So I stayed after and I spoke with him. He said, what are you doing here? I was like, what do you mean, sir? You know, he said, what are you doing here? You're wasting your time and my time. I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you shouldn't be in this class. You should be in the honors class. I said, I really struggle to read. And they told me that I should take this class. And he said, you're too smart for this class. You know the difference between a student and a pupil? I said, no. And he said, a pupil just goes to school and then they leave when the bell rings. A student sticks around and they get involved. They do something that's meaningful and they change. Which one do you want to be, Young? And I said, I think I want to be a student. He's like, take harder classes. And then he dismissed me. And I actually, one of the best things I ever did was not listen to him. I stayed in his class and he was the best teacher I've ever had in my life. But it was in ninth grade, I realized that I wanted to be a teacher like that. He would make us debate and wear outfits and do theater. And it was like, we were reading, you know, Frankenstein. And again, I almost never read the books. I would try so hard and I just couldn't do it in the allotted time. I'd have to use Spark Notes and things. But what I did read, I loved. And I just wanted to be like him my whole life. And so as soon as I could, I wanted to create a program that would allow kids to do things that were really authentic. And I find that it wasn't until I got to college that like the great learning happened. Then I was doing stuff that I really cared about in incredible depth. And I thought, what a shame that we have to wait so long to learn like this. You know, right. Going back to the Randulli quote, like, why do we have to try to learn everything? I certainly understand. I think that there are non-negotiables. We should learn how to read and write. We should learn mathematics, right? But I thought, wow, this is incredible. So the ethos behind Young Scholars Academy was, what if we do that college level, university level learning for really young kids? You know, they have asynchronous profiles. You take a twice exceptional student who has, you know, exceptional strengths, exceptional struggles, right? They might be two standard deviations over in terms of like IQ and giftedness. And there might be two standard deviations over to the left in their auditory processing or, you know, autism, ADHD, et cetera. And this profile that's so split on both ends of the bell curve, you know, what if we appeal to the brain of the child, the interest area of the child, and do things in great depth? So we started doing debate for seven-year-olds, you know, cryptocurrency investing for nine-year-olds, entrepreneurship, right? Coding, robotics, you know, Minecraft, executive function courses, you name it. We have almost 30 different classes and it works, you know, sounds crazy, but when you do what kids like and you do it at a high level that they're capable of, they flourish. And so that's sort of the cup half full part of my education that I really wanted to replicate, was a combination of great passionate teaching and caring combined with mentoring, as well as that kind of high level learning that you get when you're in your area of interest, like in the university.
And on that note, I think now would be a good time to share the video that you have on your website. Make sure, okay, I had to make sure that the audio was on. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay.
If anyone's on the fence, absolutely jump on this opportunity.
My 13-year-old, twice exceptional son, really struggles with online learning.
As a parent of a 2E child, we are always looking for ways for him to feel stimulated, for him to grow, for him to feel excited about classes, and that happens with Young Scholars Academy.
I can easily say that Mr. Sam was the most influential, connecting, encouraging teacher that my son had.
Young Scholars Academy, and Mr. Sam in particular as an educator, has really helped my son develop the skills of learning online.
I cannot say enough wonderful things about Young Scholars Academy, and in particular, Mr. Sam.
The caliber of instruction is amazing.
He has an amazing ability to really go deep with students and really hold them accountable to their highest selves.
The courses that are offered are really engaging. My son has taken everything from crypto to debate to socializing secrets, and all of those courses were really helpful for my son to not only learn the content of the class, but also to really practice online learning.
He always looks forward to every class that he takes. You never have to fight for him to go. He constantly is talking about Young Scholars Academy, telling his friends about it, and his parents who do too.
Thanks to Young Scholars Academy for that incredible education.
Parents out there, if anyone's on the fence.
I meant to hit pause and I hit, it must have paused at the exact same second that I went to hit play.
Not to worry.
All right. So, tell me with these classes. So that was a cool video, first of all. And so neat to be able to get that kind of input from the parents of some of your students. With your academy, is this an accredited school that they can go through it from whatever grade and they get all the credits and then they can graduate, or they can go back to a public school to graduate? How does all of that work?
So we have some courses which are accredited by the College Board. So we offer essentially sort of two different tiers of classes. We have our highest level is like our AP advanced placement courses. And we also have an adulting class, which is for seniors only. And it's sort of a life design course. Those advanced placement courses are accredited by the College Board. And essentially you get a little transcript that you can staple on top of your transcript saying, you know, you've taken this class. The rest of our classes exist outside the system by design. They're enrichment learning for the sake of learning. I say like we're like kind of in the business of saving learning, and I think that happens by creating a good distance between grades and learning. You know, if fail equals F, then I think that we're sending mixed messages. If fail equals, you know, thinking and learning and reflecting, we're doing it right. So by design, we're very much an enrichment center, an enrichment school. And that means that we do have charters and different funds and things that we're approved with, and they will count that and also fund our courses. But for the most part, I would say 90% of our families are simply taking classes just to have a place where their kids can connect with like-minded friends and study under mentors.
So how does it work? So, because you just said they'll connect with like-minded friends. So can you describe what one of the sessions mm-hmm. might be like?
Yeah, so our model is essentially a really social model. So we believe that like our kids are really isolated a lot of the times, and that is the challenge. So we have small group classes, 6 to 8 kids per class. They run about 8 weeks or so typically over the course of the whole school year. So the idea is that they start in the beginning and they stay with us the whole year, every 8 weeks. And they're enrolled in content classes that they might be interested in. So they might be interested in robotics and engineering and advocacy, let's say. So they would take those three classes, robotics, engineering, advocacy, and they also then get a free class, which we have called Homeroom Social Club. And this is just like if you went to a brick and mortar school, you have a homeroom where the kids come together and they play different games. They can kind of connect, build interests. Usually they'll often have like a week where they're kind of sharing something. So we had a student last week share like her drawing. She's really good at drawing. She was teaching kids how to draw like a cat person. And then the other kids kind of join along. And then the next week, someone's going to teach like watercolor painting. Another student has a frog, and he showed us like the terrarium for his 5 different frogs and how they differ. And he actually did like a whole change like of all the soil and sand and the water and explained to us why this frog gets more water and so forth. And so it's a place for the kids to come together They have the content classes where they're learning the stuff that they love. And then they're often in the homeroom club with the same kids or different kids. And they're just connecting around their interests and having a place to like socialize and connect with each other. And then we do really cool community events. So we have next week, we have Julie Skolnick coming. We have Sarah Ward. We had Seth Perler and Debbie Reber, a bunch of Dr. Joseph Ranzulli, who I talked about at the top. And we have kind of parent community happening that way. And then we also have the kiddos do like student showcases and show and tell nights and things like that. So it's a really cool space. Obviously I'm biased, but.
Well, I mean, I'm not biased and it sounds like a really cool space. So when do these classes run? Do they run like a typical school year or what's the schedule like?
So we have these 5 8-week semesters. So essentially that period is the school year. So end of August to middle, late June. And that runs, it's like fall one, fall two, winter, spring one, spring two. And those five span the year. And then during the summer, we have summer camps as well. And as far as offerings, this is the most challenging part of serving the world, right? Is that finding that magic time.
Right.
We have a pretty mostly North American community, but we do have international kids. So like I still teach two classes a day or so. And yesterday I had a class with a student from Dubai and I had a class with a student from New Zealand. And wow. So what's really cool is again, you take someone who's not only maybe the only person like them in their zip code, but maybe in their, you know, a whole part of their region and they kind of come together and connect. And so it's a really special thing. And so the classes are sometimes in the morning and sometimes in the afternoon.
Okay. So, I was just on the site again. So fall open house. So, if they go to your website, which is on the screen right now, but it is youngscholarsacademy.org, right now. So this will eventually come out as an actual podcast versus this live stream. So when I say right now, we're talking November 7th of 2023. So when this comes out as the podcast, it might be next year. So you might hopefully probably will have something else up here at that time. But so they just go to your website, Young Scholars Academy, and they can learn about more things about the school. What else can they learn?
If you click fall courses right there, that you can see all the different courses that I've been talking about. So again, we usually have about anywhere from 27 to 30 courses. If you scroll down, you'll see these different boxes that jumps you right there. So you can see the AP courses we were talking about, and we kind of break them up by sort of cluster. So life skills courses, social, we have STEAM and humanities and art. And so people can check those out. We always host a live open house in the weeks leading up to the new semester. And it's sort of like a back to school night. So this little clip that you were showing that you were kind of teasing us with, right? With the mom and the daughter there. It's an open house night. It's a 2-hour live back to school night, basically. And all of our teachers come, a handful of families come, and we'll usually have three families like this one that you see offer testimonials and kind of share their journey. And then we all go into the different breakout rooms, and it's sort of a way for kids and parents to go meet the teacher now they've heard about the class and learn a little bit more about what they can expect and actually start to build that relationship before the semester even starts, because we find that that's really reduces anxiety for the kids if they've already met the teacher and maybe some of the kids.
Right.
And so it's a really special way to kind of get a jump start on that community building.
Awesome. So is there anywhere else that you would like? So what are self-paced courses? Are those the same things?
We have a couple of courses that we offer that are essentially a go at your own pace. So because we do have an international community, we have families who are maybe not able to take the times. A lot of families in Asia who contact us and say, like, we just can't do it. You don't work at the right time for us. And so we have taken our two most popular classes, speech and debate, and then our executive function class. And families can click that, and then they can essentially get a five module class that sort of go at your own pace. And they submit the work to me, and I can offer feedback and things like that. But it's very much they're not meeting with other students, but they're still developing the skills as if they, you know, they would.
Awesome. Okay. Anything else before I stop sharing the website that you want me to show?
I mean, there's a lot on there. I think that the main thing, obviously, is our courses. We're always hopeful that people will explore our community. We also have blogs and all kinds of different stuff. I recommend to anyone that checks out our site to, if you go all the way to the bottom, just to input your email. So we have community events all the time. And there's a little thing at the very bottom that allows you to, if you go a tiny bit past there, right there on the right, you can input your information, and that way you never miss anything. And that also gives you a free resource that we share out with our new community members.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, we could probably spend the whole show just talking about all the different things that are on your website. I did just want to pop over to the blog really quick just to see a few of the titles, because I have read a couple of these myself, and very well done. It gives a lot of information and just reaches people where they are, I think, in a lot of cases. So I'm going to stop sharing now. So we have talked a lot today so far about these terms, twice exceptional and executive function. I imagine that most of the viewers know what those terms mean, but in case there are people who are watching who have not heard those terms before or don't quite have a good understanding, would you please explain those things to them?
Yeah, I think most people don't know twice exceptional. And I often joke that I'll retire. I'll know my work's done on the day that I can go up to anyone I want and say, I work with 2E kids. And they can say, hey, way to go. Until that day, I've got to roll up my sleeves. But the term twice exceptional, this is what I was referring to before. This is the idea of someone who has simultaneously has dual exceptionality. So I think the two S's, exceptional strengths and exceptional struggles. And again, that can be any kind of asynchronous profile. Usually when we think of that bell curve, for those who are watching, it's the people who are usually two standard deviations over in both sides. So again, the profile of someone who is maybe highly verbal, incredibly intelligent, can spit out facts and figures. And when we ask them to write down a paper, it's like, where are they? You know, where do they go? Where's the work? That the kind of profile of someone who's maybe going to struggle with the production requirements, but has this genius level capacity maybe. And there's some more nuance and complexity. That's a very basic idea.
Sure.
But when we think about the complexity a bit, it gets more interesting, because there's also a principle in twice exceptionality. So again, if we define this as people who have exceptional strengths and exceptional struggles, it gets more complex when we think about where are we looking and how they're showing up, right? Exceptional strengths might not be something that we see with the Simone Biles example, like in the classroom, right? We might not see that someone is a champion gymnast in math class. In fact, I can almost guarantee you won't. But you, depending on the kind of math class you're having, I'm interested to hear if you say otherwise.
Right, yeah. I'm kind of thinking like,
if it's a really,
because we can talk about the angles,
right? And, exactly.
You know, I mean, like all that stuff could be involved in math.
That's strength-based learning, right there.
Right.
But the idea is that that's a narrow skill range, right? That's a narrow. Think about like Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences, right? We're talking about maybe like verbal, you know, visual, and you know, I guess auditory, perhaps. But when we think about, you know, naturalistic and kinesthetic and a lot of these others, I guess mathematical, logical as well. When we think about a lot of the others, we're not going to necessarily get that in there. So when we talk about twice exceptionality, it's complex in where we're looking for it. And it's also more complex in the way in which we think about it. And what I mean by that is sometimes we see the, I'm going to use my hand gestures here. So for people who are listening later, we see the strength cover the learning difference or disability, right? So they seem to be just a gifted student, but they're actually really struggling in certain areas, but they're compensating. We can also see, and this could be an example of someone who's like, again, incredibly verbal and dyslexic. We don't notice because they're so charming and chatty. We could see the opposite, someone who's incredibly gifted, but never get to see it because their learning differences scream so loud. So that can kind of mask. These are called the three kinds of masking. Gift masks learning difference. Learning difference mask gift. And then the most difficult profile is when the two mask one another, and it can be difficult to detect both the gifted area or strength area and the struggle area or learning difference area. So that's a kind of long way to answer your first question. Your second one was executive function. Now, executive function skills more specifically. And if we think of executive function skills, I always like the idea of like the CEO of the brain or the air traffic control tower, right? This is the prefrontal cortex. This is that frontal part of our brain, which we know is developing way later than we expect kids to do things. You know, we're like, why are these kids not doing this thing? It's like, well, part of their brain is still wet cement. But that's a whole other conversation. These are the CEO skills, though. These are the doing skills. These are the, you know, initiating a task, capturing ideas, prioritizing different items over one another, saying no to something that might feel pertinent, right? Essentially impulse control, where there are a great many skills that are part of that suite that we call executive function skills. And again, it gets really way more nuanced when we combine the two, when we look at these unique cognitive profiles, these brain profiles, and say, well, this part of their brain is seeing way more activity and this part of their brain seeing way less activity. Therefore, we can conclude that, you know, it's going to be more difficult or it's going to take longer to develop these kinds of skills and might want to approach it from different angles. So again, twice exceptional is this idea of exceptional strengths, exceptional struggles. If you think of the executive function skills, it's kind of like a bucket of skills that are kind of like the CEO or the air traffic controller, or the doing skills. And those two are incredibly complex, but incredibly important to understand.
Right. And honestly, I feel that we do such a very poor job of understanding executive function skills specifically, because those are for everyone. You know, it doesn't matter ability level, age level, socioeconomic, everyone has executive function skills. And how we develop them, I do presentations and I have sort of an arc that tells like what ages the different things are typically developed. But even in typically developed, to the degree, isn't necessarily always the same. And there's so much of what we do in education. And the big thing that I talk about that surprises my teachers when I tell them this is homework. Our kids really don't have all the executive function skills they need to do homework solely by themselves until around the age of 15 or 16. And they just look at me and they go, wait, what? Where, you know, like, why isn't this in our education when we're learning to be teachers? And maybe it was, but we just, you know, it was a day out of the class. And so we just got it for the day and then it, you know, we moved on. But when we're not using the information that we have available to us to direct our instruction, we are doing a terrible disservice, I think, to our students.
Absolutely.
And it goes back to what you said earlier at the beginning of this is, you know, we have this outdated way of teaching and we have an outdated education system and we need to change that. And I'm so appreciative for opportunities that students have like yours to do something that is using information that we have learned about over the years that makes learning exciting, that makes learning more interesting, that is more engaging. And I know it seems like I'm harping on the schools and I kind of am, but at the same time, I understand their struggle because, you know, you're saying you have a few dozen students or, you know, maybe 100 or so, but in a classroom, everybody's there, you know, and you could have hundreds, thousands. I mean, we have hundreds of thousands of students, millions actually, across the country that we're trying to educate. And so it's harder to get that differentiation and to use the lessons that we know we should be doing. So again, I'm so appreciative for what you're doing to get kids excited about learning again, because we have to have that, or I think our society will just sort of implode. For lack of a better term.
I mean, this is definitely where the P word comes in, right? It's privilege. I mean, I taught almost 15 years in schools, and I had the good fortune of spending most of that time in really progressive private schools. But I taught in public school, and, you know, I'm a pretty good teacher. But when you have 34 kids in a class, it is really hard, you know, to do these things. I get that kind of divisiveness that occurs in the system where it's like that, you know, the sort of the generals and the soldiers on the ground, you know, and it's like, you can tell us what you want us to do, but at the end of the day, our hands are pretty tied. I mean, I can't even move around my classroom, let alone, right, you know, move the desk so the kids can do projects in a certain way. So it's complex. It's incredibly complex. And yes, the macro system needs to change. There, it is outdated. I did a talk not so long ago. Ironically, by the way, I did a TEDx talk and I actually went over time because I was dysregulated and excited, and they won't post it on the website because it was too long. It went over the 18 minute cap. So I'm talking about executive function skills and I'm not applying them, right? Because of my, because of who I am. And that's an important thing to note. It's like, and I share that stuff with the kids all the time. like, hey, you know, this is a work in progress. I have a lot of anxiety. I have ADHD. With that comes anxiety and depression. There's different things that are a struggle. And I think being able to share that with the kids. But again, that's a privilege because I have classes of 6 and 8 kids where I can do that. It is complex. But in that talk, I said that it used to be that we were an industrial country preparing for an industrial era. I think now we are an intellectual country preparing for an industrial era. And my wife actually corrected me recently. I actually quite like this. She said, we're an quandary-based country now that we're integrating with AI and creating this kind of working relationship. It's not about what you know. It's about how you ask and how you interact with the intelligence. And we're still preparing for an industrial-based era. And I think that's the trend, right? Is that we're now maybe in our third iteration of change, but we're still teaching first generation skills. Right. And I don't know that that serves us well.
No, I don't think it does. And not only does it not serve the general population well, but it certainly does a disservice for our 2Es. And those in special education for other reasons as well. And, you know, it's interesting. There's so many times when something comes up and we make an accommodation because we think we're making it for a population of people. And yet we find out that it benefits beyond what we ever expected the population to be benefited by. And I think in a lot of ways, some of the things that we're doing in special education and for twice exceptional kids is something that would benefit the majority of the population instead of this small group that it seems to be built for at this time.
I'm sure anytime you've done, I've experienced this almost every time you do some kind of professional development, something or a talk at a conference, someone's like, couldn't that work for everyone? And I'm like, mm-hmm. Yes, I'm just talking about who really needs it, but everybody would benefit from this. You know, this is kind of like a rising tide, you know, at the end of the day. I mean, the $1 million question is like, are we going to benefit more focusing on our strengths or our struggles? Right. We can raise the bottom or we can raise the roof. You know, right. I made this up years ago in my mind and it's stuck with me ever since. I don't know why, but I think it brings up like this total imaginary scenario. But I picture like George Lucas in fourth grade in the back of some classroom and he's like doodling. Right. And some math teacher's like, Lucas, put away your papers, you know, and he's like, we're doing multiplication tables or something like irrelevant. Right. And I just think like the audacity, you know, George Lucas. You know, creating this universe that like the whole, that really binds the whole world. Right. And whether you like it or love it or indifferent, people know Star Wars. And at some point, some teacher thought George better stop doodling.
Right.
You know, and I don't know, again, this is my imagination having a field day, but I just think that is really fun. But my TED talk, I said, imagine if Superman spent his whole life getting over his kryptonite allergy. Right. Imagine if his whole purpose was getting over his one weakness.
Yeah.
Like that's basically what we do to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And it is certainly what we do in special education. It is unfortunately a very deficit based system. And when you try to tell people, like I just had this conversation recently with an IEP team that we want the child assessed in preferred activities because if they prefer the activity, they're going to show you what they can do, right? And they're like, well, we can't assess on preferred activities only because then we don't know if the student is generalizing the skill. I'm like, you can do, it's not like the child only has one preferred activity. There are other things that you can do when the child is relaxed and they're not stressed, but we're so used to zoning in and like finding all the deficits that we don't look at the strengths and we don't appreciate the strengths in the way they should be appreciated.
Absolutely. And as we kind of loop back to the conversation about executive functions earlier, it's like, you know, yeah, I have had a hard time most of my life staying engaged on tasks, unless I'm really excited about them. And then I have a hard time stopping, you know, and it's like, I'm the same me. It's just the content that's changed. And all of a sudden my, you know, not only task initiation, but that kind of stick with itness, maybe the grit and the time commitment are going to be through the roof. And so I think one of the great differentiators, as you're saying, Shelley, and kudos to you for saying that, is where are the interests, where are the talents, where's the curiosity, and can we meet the person there? Because that's where we're going to see them at their best. Let's get a snapshot there and then figure out how we can develop that even further rather than try to bring the bottom up. And yeah, the medical model, the deficit-based model is incredibly problematic.
Yeah. And I get that we had to start somewhere. And I understand that, you know, education, the special education law specifically has been revamped a couple of times, but it hasn't been redone in almost 20 years. The last time it was redone was 2004. We have learned an incredible amount of knowledge in almost 20 years. And so it does need to be reauthorized again, and just cover so much better, because that it did start with the deficit model. The original, to be eligible for a learning disability, you had to be 2 years behind. And that was how you qualified for special education under a learning disability. Now they have taken that out, but I think in a lot of schools, they're still doing it with that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, we're damaging children's self-esteem by having them fail in the traditional manner for 2 years, you know, for some amount of time. And then somehow we expect them to be like, oh, well, that was no big deal. I'll be fine.
Right.
I'll just, you know,
go yeah, on and learn. And then all the attention is on the fix it, right? It's like, hey, we're going to meet with specialists, or the worst thing that ever happens. And I was guilty of this when I was younger and when I started teaching in public school, because it makes sense on paper. But when, you know, okay, well, they're struggling in math, so we got to, you know, let's cut out those electives and we need some space to work on the math, right? Which again, I understand, but the harm is that you're now taking away the highlight of the kid's day, where they might actually do intellectually stimulating things in the same area, right? Someone wants to work on music. There's a buttload of math involved in that.
Right.
Right. But it's not going to be the stuff that's maybe showing up on the test. So we have to let go of the how, you know, can we stop the math and do the other stuff? I know that's radical, right. But, and that's really, again, that's the whole model behind us. Like no grades, doing what kids love, finding the ability to explore and connect with other kids. And if they struggle differentiating, if they fail at something, make it an incredible learning experience. One of my favorite quotes is, I can't lose because I either win or I learn. You know, I like that a lot. Like either way you win. And it's, I don't know, I think just a little pivot like that is so important. And I saw what Fran just wrote, like that happened to their family. And I think that's really difficult. You know, a lot of kids, it's good intentions, you know, like, you struggle with reading, let's send you to a phonics person and let's get a reading specialist. And you want your kid to be able to read. I get that. Mm-hmm. If we look at where they're going to be most interested in doing these things, or what's going to be relevant, or when can that skill become a step along the way toward the carrot that they really care about? You know, hey, if you want to be a YouTuber, well, we're going to have to be able to figure out how's the way we can get scripts and then read off them. So like, what are some ideas? And then can we write some and then read them back and so forth?
Yeah. And we've bogged our educators down with so much that it is difficult for them to think outside the box about some of these concepts and ideas, because they're so used to doing it a certain way. And when myself or someone like you come along and try to talk to them about looking at it differently, they're so resistant to it because, well, this way has been working. And it's like, but has it? Well, let's take a step back and look on the outside in and see if it's really working. And in so many cases, it's not. But yet somehow people still see it as though it is, which is mind boggling to me. But we can't solve the education system today.
I think that's a big systemic struggle, in that everything is assessed in tests, and there's this pressure to kind of conform to the narrow skill range, you know, that's required of the test. And by the way, I teach AP classes. Like, I believe in teaching kids these skills. You know, how do you note take? How do you capture content? How do you revisit it? Multiple choice strategies. Like, these are all important skills because we live in a society that believes in testing and so forth. So I think there's ways to teach it and ways to make it fun and meaningful. But I think that a lot of the time, so many educators are just kind of in survival mode and they're just trying to get by, and they have such a diverse class with so many kids, and it can just be really, really, really challenging, like a Sisyphusian, you know, feat that they just keep trying to push the rock up and they hope they get higher than last year. And then it rolls back down. And it's a really difficult, it's a really difficult space. I think the best thing that we can do is close our doors, do what's right by the kids, teach them the content that we know is going to be the content that's aligned with what they care about, is going to allow the most introspection, depth, allow them to connect around their interests and have someone who's older that they can maybe look up to, kind of take that mentoring role, right? It takes a village, and encourage them to grow where they're already showing, you know, where they're already showing strengths and promising curiosity and interests and so forth. And I think that's what we do. You know, my favorite mentor in college when I was getting my degree in education, she's like, just close your door and teach. You know what to do.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, that's kind of sad on the one hand, but I want to do right by the kids.
Right. And I think it's so important what you said earlier about, you know, we were setting our kids up to go into an industrial society and we're not doing that at all anymore. But even, you know, that we don't acknowledge our staff, our educators, because they do know kids. They are with them, but they're so worried because as society, we say, well, we have to have some concrete, you know, stat-based, standardized way of saying whether or not you're doing a good job in your classroom with your kids. And so, so much of a student's performance is now used to judge how well or how poorly a teacher is doing in the classroom. And so there is that fear of, I can't teach what I know the kids really love and want and would thrive on because that's not going to show up on the standardized test.
Right.
And then that's my job.
Right.
And then we lose the really good teachers and we're losing great teachers left and right now because of lots of reasons. But I think the top three reasons that I've heard recently is, of course, pay and then respect and then behaviors. We're not doing a good job of teaching our teachers how to work with behaviors and kids with unwanted behaviors. And a lot of those behaviors come from the fact that their executive functioning skills are expected to be here, but and they're here. And so they're frustrated and they're showing some behaviors. And so, you know, it's like this vicious cycle of how do we infuse the knowledge that that the educators need and get everybody on the same page so that we can grow a great society full of what are children now, but who will be adults in 5, 10, 20 years. And I think that some of what you're doing is providing that for those kids who can access it.
I like to think so. I mean, I think that, again, when I sort of close my eyes and think like, what's the whole point of education? It's, you know, it's always been, the answer's always been, you know, we improve our education system so we can have like a more rich, flourishing society, right? That could be economically, it could be from a mental health perspective, et cetera. But when we think about sort of talent development, and I approach this idea that, like, you know, sort of from a humanist perspective, rather than looking at from a medical perspective of we need to like correct ourselves so that we can be better. I think, how can we be the best version of ourselves for our own selves and for the collective? How can we sort of self-actualize, to use like Maslow's hierarchy of needs? How can we climb the ladder and become a free-thinking, creative, flow state version of ourselves? And what happens when you have everyone do that is that you have a more rich society, right? A place where people will innovate. And historically, Americans' success, I speak from the United States perspective, we have been incredibly successful because we have allowed people financially to take big swings and miss, right? We allow for lots of innovation because you can declare bankruptcy or you can get a big loan or you can get, you know, investment capital. And so that leads to the PayPals and the Facebooks and the SpaceXs and the Salk vaccine, you know, all these different things that have happened. When we don't foster that, we lose. We lose as a collective, curing cancer. We lose as a mental health culture, with severe depression, anxiety, and so forth. And we lose. And so I think that our goal is to help our kids become the best version of themselves in their area of genius, in their area of strength. And because that then becomes the tide that raises and makes our collective society better, more rich, more fruitful, better literature, better content, better film, everything. I don't know.
Yeah. I think staying curious is one of the best things that we can teach our children, and to be ourselves, because if we're content in what's around us, we're going to get stagnant and we're going to get boring and we're not going to continue to grow and thrive in our society. So I appreciate that you brought that up. This has been a great conversation. I have so much enjoyed talking with you. We are coming up on the hour mark, so I just want to make sure that you have opportunity for anything that you haven't said that you thought, oh, I really wanted to say this today, and then your final thoughts.
Yeah, no, again, I am incredibly grateful to you, Shelley, for hosting this, I think really like kind of bubble, this little space that people can come in and sort of soak in, and people, whether you're here live or watching the recording or listening later, I really appreciate you, you know, wanting to be a part of growing your own thoughts and reflections. And I hope that me rambling on for some time in an under-caffeinated state, I hope something in there, some piece of pasta stuck against the wall. But in all seriousness, I hope that everyone can make a shift. I hope that we can make a pledge to make a shift, to choose to look at strengths rather than look at struggles. There will be struggles. There are struggles. Some are more severe or concerning, and not saying like don't pay attention to red flags and things. But what I'm saying is to choose to focus on your strengths as parents, as educators, etc., your students or children's strengths, and develop yours so that you can help them develop theirs, right? And letting go of what we're not good at necessarily. I'm not going to ever be an accountant who's really good at spreadsheets. That's my hell. I mean, that's the seventh circle. That's as bad as it gets. So if I spent my whole life trying to be better at Excel spreadsheets, I could get better, but I'd probably only ever be adequate. My strength is talking with people and leading people and creating and producing something new and stretching the bounds of things. I've always liked to do that. And so, you know, having people that can help me with spreadsheets is great. And people who love to do spreadsheets and need all kinds of random creative thoughts to try to organize into them, I can give you that. So we can kind of complete one another. And I just think that we all benefit from that. So if anything today has been valuable for you, I hope, if you want to check us out, go check out youngscholarsacademy.org. We are enrolling every 8 weeks and hope to serve your family at the highest level and welcome you into our virtual village.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sam, from Young Scholars Academy, and for Fran to join us in your comments today. I so appreciate that. And for those of you who joined and didn't comment, I appreciate you as well. If you are watching in the replay, be sure to let us know if you have any questions or comments. I will make sure that Sam sees them if it's something that I can't answer or isn't directed to me. And I will see you all next time. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.